Okay. So that handout has a bunch of those chain rule formulas. I didn't want to have to fill up a whole other board of them again. Those are those formulas I squeezed in at the end on Tuesday. Now, let's say we're on a curved surface. And let's say we take some measurements. We measure how steep it is in the y direction. And it's going up with a slope of, say, 1. And we measure the slope in the x direction. I guess, what's the book usually? Usually x comes out of the board, right? So I guess 1 in the x direction, and let's say negative a half in the y direction. And where is our position? Let's say we're at 3, 4. So we measure how steep things are in two directions. And so we have these two partial derivatives. There's the funny fake fraction notation, there's the subscript notation. So we measure a slope up of 1 in the positive x direction. If you go this way, you're going up. And in the y direction, sloping down. So we have kind of, so at least near this area, we think of this, we're on this plane. Spanned by my arms here. Now my question is, what if we try to measure slopes in terms of the polar coordinate system? Zx slope of 1, a zy slope of negative a half. What's our zr slope? How can I find that out? So this is kind of the harder version. I think, is this the harder version? There's another version of it. Let's see if I remember which one is the harder version. We could ask a different question, different surface. Put it the other way around. Maybe I measure slopes in the radial and angular directions here. I have to raise this board. Same kind of question, just the roles of the coordinate systems are flipped around. So which one of these two is the harder question? Which is easier? Given x and y, find r and theta, or given r and theta, find x and y? It's back in polar coordinates from calculus 2, which is usually easier. Let's see. In the left example, you can figure out what x and y are. There's this unifying thing here. Both things have this relationship. Going the other way, going from x and y to r and theta is usually considered the harder one. So, if possible, I would like to deal with this. Use partial derivatives of this, say, as opposed to partial derivatives of that. Okay. You can quibble with my choice, but let's see. Who remembers what is the formula for the derivative of the inverse cosine function? It doesn't come up very often. It's negative 1 over the square root of 1 minus x squared. Yeah. All that. Yeah. I claim that we actually don't need to deal with the derivatives of this thing. I claim we can solve both problems just using the partial derivatives of the easier one. Okay? So, in both setups, let's see here, we have a common chain rule is relation here. Okay, so let's think of this. What's the underlying diagram here? So if we're using that easier pair of equations, then you plug in r and theta, and you get out x's and y's. So we have this kind of diagram, if you're just looking at my handout. R and theta influence x, which in turn influence z. So you get these kinds of partial derivative equations. The zr slope is the zx slope times the xr slope plus the zy slope times the yr slope. So you can think of that as if r increases, say, that changes x and y, and then those changes in x and y cause changes in z. And we add it up to get the total rate of change. Right? How, for a given tiny increase of r, how much does z increase? Crucially, holding theta constant. Right? And the same kind of formula for how a little change in theta holding r constant would influence z. Right? Theta would influence x. If we change theta, we're probably going to change x. And so we have an x theta slope multiplied by a zx slope. And theta also influences y, which influences z. So we also need to add in
that influence. ZY slope times Y theta slope. Now, in our two problems, I give you some of the numbers in this equation. Like here, I give you ZR and Z theta slopes, right? So I give you the left side of the equation. In this problem, I give you some numbers on the right side of the equation. Let's see here. Right, the ZY slopes and the ZX slopes. But there's some other numbers, right? We need an XR, a YR, an X theta, and a Y theta. We need those four slopes. Okay. So for those, okay, I'm going to have to actually compute some partial derivatives. I have the formula up there. Okay. So let's see. What is partial x partial r using the r cosine theta formula? Take the derivative of this thing with respect to r, holding theta as a constant, and we get cosine theta. Yeah. Okay. All right, let's do the other partial derivative of x. Here it is in the subscript notation, right? Okay, now take the derivative with respect to theta, treating r as a constant, and you get
negative
r sine theta. Yes. Okay. The r is a constant multiple now, instead of the cosine theta being a constant multiple. So we get r times the negative sine theta from differentiating the cosine function. And if you want to be clever, you can say, hey, this is just x, what we had, divided by an r. And this is just the opposite of y, right? And so, in fact, we could actually, and we know r is square root of x squared plus y squared. So that'll help for this side here. You can do a similar computation for y. Sine of theta, and if we want to get clever with our polar coordinate stuff, we can say, hey, that's y divided by r, right? Because y is r sine theta, okay? And we know a formula for r that's not too terrible. Right? At least I didn't have to take the derivatives of this thing. And, okay, the other partial derivative, the y theta slope. Okay. So now r is a constant multiple, and the derivative assigned is cosine. Hey, that's just x. That's not bad. Okay. So I have four numbers that go into the right side of the equation here. Indicate with boxes or something, right? Okay. I have formulas now for those four quantities. And if I'm doing this problem where I know r and theta, I'm going to use my formulas that involve r and theta. If I'm doing this problem that involves x's and y's, I'm going to use these formulas I got using just x's and y's. And, okay. Now what about the others? There's four other quantities here, right? Partial z, partial x appears twice. Partial z, partial y appears twice. And then there's partial z, partial r, partial z, partial theta. Okay? So there's four other quantities. And in each of my problems, I give you two of them. Right? Here I give you the two quantities on the left side. Here I give you the quantities, the remaining unknown quantities on the right side. So in both of these problems, you end up having two equations and two things still unknown. So you end up with a system of equations. Let's see which of the scenarios has the easier system here. Okay, so I think this will work. Yeah. Okay. So I think it looks like this one will actually be the easier one, because this one asks for the ZR and Z theta slopes, which are already isolated here. Okay. All right, so I'm just going to plug in all the numbers. All right, so partial Z partial R is going to be my partial Z partial X, which is given. It's a 1. And then I have a partial X partial R term, right, from up here. Okay, so what did I get? I got that was X over R. 3 squared plus 4 squared is 5 squared. Yeah, I did that on purpose. Okay, so there's my X over R. And then partial Z partial Y. I said that was negative 1/2. And then partial y partial r. Okay, that's y over r. And yeah, I rigged things so that the r would be a round number in this one. Okay, so that's 4/5. Yay. I believe the answer simplifies to 1/5. Okay, so we have this slope of up 1 in the positive x direction of negative 1/2 slope in the y direction. And I think here I'm at x equals 3, y equals 4, I think I'm going about this way. This would be the radial direction. I'm going up in this gentle slope of 1/5 if I go that way. I can have kind of a picture here. Let's see. So. Okay, so here's the negative 1/2 slope that way, the slope of 1 going this way, and then in this radial direction, we have a slope of 1/5. Okay. Think of this as you're on a hillside, and depending which way you walk, you're either going up steeply or gently, or going down steeply or gently. That makes sense, right? It came out something in between negative 1/2 and 1. Okay. Let's get the theta slope. All right, so. Now, which way do we have to go to increase theta? Well, remember, theta is counterclockwise angle, right, from the positive x-axis. So we're... To increase r, we go that way, away from the origin. To increase theta, you're going this way. So the remaining slope is going to be asking, if we go that way along this hillside, how steeply is our elevation changing, right? In terms of per theta. Okay, so given this kind of picture here, what do you think this slope will be? Positive or negative? What do you think this theta slope will be?
Positive.
Who thinks it's positive? Who thinks it's negative? Okay, I see some. Yeah, there's some more confidence in negative. Yeah, well, certainly if we're going to have slope 1 this way, if we went the opposite direction this way, we'd have slope negative 1. So we're expecting something between... negative 1/2 and negative 1. The only complication in that is that this is measuring change in z per radian, not per meter, okay? Right? Because it's dz d theta, right?
So
it will be negative, but the size of the slope might be initially confusing because of the fact that it's for the this thing we're not measuring a slope of increase of this many vertical meters per meter traveled this way. We're measuring increase in number of vertical meters per radian, right? As we change our angular position, right? So let's see how that works out. If you think about this, look at this. Since we're at a distance 5 from the origin, just going 1 radian moves us an arc length of 5 along a circle. So we should expect this slope to be kind of 5 times bigger than we would have naively expected. All right, so let's see here. Okay, so 1 again for the partial z, partial x. Now partial x, partial theta is negative y after our little polar simplification there. So what's negative y? Well, that's negative 4. Okay. And then we need partial z, partial y again. And then we need partial y, partial theta, which is just x. 3. Okay, so negative 4, so negative 8 halves, and a negative 3 halves, negative 11 halves. Okay. So yeah, it's negative, but it's about 5 times bigger than you would have naively expected looking at the numbers here, right? Because this is medians per meters per radian, if you're using some physical units, not meters per meter. So it's negative. If you wanted to fix that little problem or paradox, if you will, of the size, you would just want to basically divide this by 5 and get something that would say, okay, if you go in this direction, then for every meter you're going in this direction, your z coordinate changes by negative 11 tenths of a meter. Okay. Any questions about that? Yeah, that wasn't so bad. We had the right sides of this equation up here, right? And we had all the numbers. There were the only complexity, of course, is that there's 6 different numbers here, right? And 2 of those numbers appear twice, so you have 8 different quantities that I had to fill in. But I filled them all in. Okay, now, this problem here, where I give you these polar-type slopes, and then ask you for Cartesian slopes, zx and zy slopes, okay, that one is the harder one, because now you'll have some unknowns on the right side that aren't even isolated. Let's see what we get. All right. So I didn't have to take partial derivatives of the square root function or of the inverse cosine. And the price I'm going to pay for that is I'm going to have to solve a system of 2 linear equations. All right. So pick your poison, I guess. Okay. So partial z partial r is negative 1 in this problem. Partial z partial theta is 4. And then partial z partial x is unknown. But, hey, I know partial z partial r. No, yeah, I know those. Oh, right, partial x partial r. Okay, let's see if I can figure that out. Well, that's cosine of theta. So that's cosine of pi over 3. I believe that is a half. This is pi over 3 is 60 degrees. Cosine of 60 degrees is a half, if I remember correctly. And then, okay, next term, partial z partial y, also unknown. And then partial y partial r. Okay, that's the sine of theta. I believe the sine of 60 degrees is the cube root of 3 divided by 2. Picked one of the special angles on purpose. Okay. And now partial z partial x times partial x partial theta. Okay, so what is that? That is going to be negative r sine theta. I know the sine of theta is root 3 over 2, because we're at theta equals 60 degrees. I just need to multiply it by a negative r, or in this case, negative 7. Okay. So there's my negative r sine theta from the partial x partial theta, which appears right over here. Next, we have partial z partial y again, unknown. And then we have, finally, partial y partial theta, which is r times the cosine of theta. R is 7. Cosine of our 60 degrees is a half. Okay. So you end up with a system of two equations. Mm. Okay. Okay. So technically, that's an algebra problem, right? Not a calculus problem. If you take some linear algebra, you'll know a pretty efficient way to solve it. Even without any linear algebra or anything fancy, you can just do the naive thing. Solve for one of them, plug your solution into the other equation. So maybe I take the first equation. And I solve for, say, partial z partial x, okay? So solve that top equation there for partial z partial x. So you're going to move the partial z partial y term to the left side, and then you're going to have nothing left but a half of the partial z partial x. So you're going to multiply that by 2. All right. So if we solve the first one, I believe we get partial z partial x equal to negative 2 minus the square root of 3 times partial z partial y. Doing a little algebra in the top line there. I isolated one of the unknowns. Okay. Now you plug that in to the second equation. So really we're bringing in two things here. Bring in the second equation. The 4 equals da 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 da. And we're bringing in our solution for one variable of the first equation. So 4 equals... Okay, so plug this thing in here. So I plugged in my solution, and I still have an unknown partial z, partial y. But hey, it's only one variable that I don't know now. Okay. And you can simplify, right? Let's see. Root 3 times root 3 is 3. That's something. So looks like we're going to have 7 times 3 halves, and then another 7 halves, so 4 7 halves. So I think that's 4 halves of 7, so I think that's 14. And there's what else? Negative 2 times root 3 over 2 times negative 7. So, there. Okay. Yeah, the algebra is not the most fun part of a calculus class, but my point here is that you can do it. Even if you don't have any fancy tricks, you can just solve for one variable, plug it in, solve for the other. Alright? Okay, okay, fine. Partial z, partial y, we can solve now, it's 4 minus 7 root 3 over 14. Okay. And now you can take your solution for partial z, partial x in terms of partial z, partial y. And there we go. So you actually can find all these numbers.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was some algebra that I had to deal with that because I chose to kind of do the chain rule backwards, so to speak. Instead of using the functions that go from x and y to r and theta, these functions, I used the functions from r and theta to x and y. And so I ended up with the harder version of the chain rule equations to solve, where I didn't have the things I want isolated. Here they were already isolated. Details of going through the whole solution didn't bore you too much, but I wanted you to see that you really can go through all the details and work out the algebra and it can all be solved. Questions or comments? So this is an example, well, two examples, right, of actually having to use the chain rule. If I had given you formulas, right, if I had given you a formula for z as a function of x and y here, and I'd given you a formula for z as a function of x and y here, then you could have just plugged in the r cosine theta and r sine theta into every x and y and gotten a big formula in terms of r and theta for this one, and you could have taken the partial derivatives of that big formula. And for this one, let's see. You could have, for this one you'd have to do things, the other way, I suppose. Yeah, this one, Not so clear how to do this one, even if I give you a formula, without doing essentially this. I guess you could do it, but it would be a very uninteresting way, arguably. Basically, if I give you a formula for z in terms of x and y, you could just take these partial derivatives and get them, right, and then figure out the x and y's given these polar coordinates. You basically completely ignore the polar partial derivatives. So the point is, with this chain rule, you don't need to have a formula for the whole function everywhere.
I can just give you information about the slopes at one point, and then you can recover other slopes at that one point. Okay. And you probably can remember some chain rule problems from Calculus 1 that were similar, related rates problems, you know. One, such and such things are changing at such and such a rate right now. Okay, how is this other thing changing right now, right? It's the same thing. You don't always get a formula for everything. You just get local information. But you can combine some local slopes to get other local slopes using the chain rule. Okay. That other board. So this is two big problems. You could have not quite so terrible complexity if you had, first of all, choose the easier version here, where you don't have to solve a system, and then maybe you don't have as many variables. Right? Instead of z, x, y, r, and theta, maybe it's just z, x, y, and t, right? Now, I think that's the book. Let's see. I was looking at section 4.5, right? That's the chain rule section, right? I was looking at some of their little exercises. Like this is a 4.5. Number 256, for example. This is dealing with circuits, right? Three parallel resistors. Resistance X, resistance Y, resistance Z. And this is supposed to be equivalent to having this one resistor R. Scenario, X, Y, and Z and T are all functions of time. So the setup here is we have time influences each of the three resistors, and then each of the three resistors influences the equivalent resistance end of the whole circuit. So the partial derivative formula here, you want to know, say, dr dt, you want the chain rule. Well, r only depends on t itself here. And if you think of t as the, you know, the real input and the xyz is intermediate, then it's just a function of one variable. So I can just use regular d differentials instead of these, you know, funny partial symbols. Right? So there's no other variable to hold constant here. So there'd be three ways for time to influence the equivalent resistance, right? Time influences what the resistance is for resistor X. Time influences the resistance of resistor Z. And then all three of those influences get multiplied by the rate at which changes in those three resistors change the equivalent resistance of the whole circuit. So there's three ways for time to influence the equivalent resistance. And this is an easier one because basically there's going to be six numbers, and the problem gives you all six numbers. Well, okay. Nah. Okay, it doesn't quite give you all six numbers. You have to actually take partial derivatives here, right? Okay, so you have to deal with that. But, all right, we'll get to that. Let's see if we can do it. So the units of resistance for X, Y, and Z are ohms. The units of time are in minutes. And all the resistors are, two of the resistors are changing. The third resistor's not changing. That actually can happen. If a resistor is heating up, its resistance will actually increase. It's plausible for resistances to actually change. That's how multimeters can measure temperature, actually, based on that. They have a resistor that's very sensitive to temperature. Its resistance changes a lot with temperature changes. Anyways, where's the real work? I guess you have to actually figure out the formulas. Figure out the three partial derivatives, right? And then you can figure out this last thing. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. If I do one of these. We need to know the three partial derivatives, right? Okay, so R sub X, or in fraction notation, partial R, partial X, right? Okay, so I'd have to hold Y and Z constant in that monstrosity. Okay, let's see what I can do here. X, Y, Z. Okay, well, let's just use the quotient rule, all right, instead of a negative power this time, okay? So I'm going to treat the y and z as constants, and so I have, with the quotient rule, I have the derivative of the numerator times the denominator, so I get yz for the x partial derivative of the numerator, and then I get my denominator. And then minus the numerator, unchanged, xyz, times the x partial derivative of the denominator, right? Okay, so holding y and z constant, yz has derivative 0, xz has derivative z, and xy has derivative y. And then the rest of the quotient rule says you have the whole denominator squared, right? Okay. And I think that simplifies a little bit, yeah? I think we got xyz squared.
I think it's going to cancel out something. Yes, x, y, z squared. So that'll cancel. X, y squared, z. And x, y squared, z. So what doesn't cancel is the yz times yz. So we end up with a yz squared divided by this thing. Squared. Okay. And the problem has some symmetry to it, right? If you permute x, y, and z, right? If you swap all the x's and y's here, things don't change. If you swap all the x's and z's, things don't change. So I can predict what the others will be. I could do them the same way with the quotient rule, but I predict that if you do the quotient rule for the other two partial derivatives, you will get this. And then what do you have to do? Now you have to plug in things like x equals 100, y equals 200, z equals 300. And then you get these three numbers. The three partial derivatives. And then you can finally compute the time partial derivative. Because you'll know the three partial derivatives, and you'll know those three time derivatives because the problem gave them to you. So that was step one, get those partial derivatives. Got them. Plug in the numbers for the resistance at the current moment in time. And I'd have to do that. And I'm running out of time, so I won't actually plug in all the numbers for you this time. So just because of lack of time. But that's how I would finish the problem. So plug in all of those many numbers. But I'd probably be a little bit bored if I made you see all that anyway. And plug in lots of numbers into big fraction. Get a big mess. All right, so this, I can just give you a few more problems from the book here. So I got this off page 423. So go ahead and do number. Go ahead and do numbers 255 and 257. And and 245. And then we'll stop. Thank you.